You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
To the right side, play action fake to Brown, Lule on a roll, downfield wide open, it's the record for G. Roy Simon, he has caught Milt, and Simon says he's the all-time CFL pass receiving leader. At the four-yard line, 4 yards separating McManus and the Lions from a trip to the Grey Cup. Doesn't get better than this. McManus, end zone, touchdown Lions! BC's going to the Grey Cup!
What's going on, CFL fans? Welcome to episode 140 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you by Metal Rocks, original handmade, one-of-a-kind jewelry made right here in BC. Check out the link on our website and see all the great pieces they have to offer. I'm your host, Brian Warishan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. It's been a long time since we brought you a show, and there are various reasons for that. Work, family, and vacation, all among them, but I'm not going to lie, I got burnout from talking about the Lions, and that was among the reasons as well. This season has been a kick in the teeth for diehard Lions fans. This is the CFL, and the Lions aren't officially out of the playoffs, but this season has now basically become an extended 2020 training camp. We'll try and get into what likely lies ahead for this team on this episode. We'll also catch up with 11-year BC Lions corner Dante Marsh, one of the best this league has ever seen. Dante is now coaching football in Northern California, and it would be fun to catch up with one of the greatest Lions of all time. Let's bring in Mojo Kemp now. Buddy, it's been a while. What have you been up to the last month?
Hey, everybody. Thanks for downloading the show. Hey, Brian, man, I cannot wait for the start of the season, Brian. Mike Riley's here. We got Jerron Carter. It's going to be a great, great year. I can't wait for the start of the season. Somebody tell me it's a bad dream. Man, it's, well, like the players, Brian, I needed a break from football. So, you know, a big thing for me that happened within the last month, man, I'm really excited about, Brian. I got back on stage with my guitar, and I was able to sing a set in front of people, which makes me really excited. For folks that don't know, I am also a singer-songwriter. I am more than just a podcaster. So that was very exciting. And just the other day, Iron Maiden was in town, and of course, I was there. It's probably been the eighth or ninth time I've seen Maiden. They just get better and better.
It was a nice break for sure. Three of them were unplanned breaks, and one of them, I'm like you, I just needed a break from talking about this football team. It's hard to do this podcast when every week we're basically repeating ourselves and talking about the same mistakes, the same problems going on with the team, and I just got burnt out from all the social media and the comments on there. And
well, you get into it on social media, man. You start throwing bombs, and people bomb you back, and you toss some more.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, if you're going to be in it, you got to be in it. So, you know,
I try to be active on social media, but, man, it's just not my thing.
It gets to be too much sometimes, though. I mean, I've, you know, over the last couple of weeks, I've kind of tried to tone things down a little bit and take a step back because, you know, I found myself getting stressed out about it. It's just football, man. So, it's disappointing the way the season has gone. I mean, everybody says the season starts at Labor Day and ours is over by Labor Day. So, you know, watching those Labor Day games over the weekend, you really got a little bit of envy with some of those environments that, you know, like in Hamilton and Winnipeg and Saskatchewan and Edmonton and Calgary. You know, those are the days that we used to have here in BC in the Western Finals and the big games that used to roll through here in the area, not too long ago, where we were getting 30, 40,000 people a game. So you long for those days to come back to BC, and watching the Labor Day games this past weekend certainly gave me a little bit of jealousy and hope that one day we can get that kind of atmosphere back in BC Place.
Well, Ottawa stole our Labor Day game. I mean, for years we played Montreal on Labor Day.
Well, Ottawa didn't play on Labor Day either. Ottawa, Montreal, BC all had a bye this year. I don't know why Ottawa and Montreal weren't playing on Labor Day, but I guess they've decided to do that with the schedule. And maybe one day, if Atlantic Canada finally gets their team, we can have the coast-to-coast classic or whatever they want to call it. But, yeah, it's in the past, I haven't really minded with the Lions having the bye, because you get to sit back and enjoy the Labor Day games and all the stuff that comes with it without any stress of watching your own team play. But certainly, watching that sold-out stadium in Regina and, the big crowd in Calgary and all the hype that surrounds those games gives you the bug that you want to see that back here in BC one day. But it has been a while since we put out a show, but during that hiatus, not much has changed with the BC Lions on the field, but the changes have started off the field with the dismissal of offensive line coach Brian Chu, who will be replaced by former Lions offensive lineman Kelly Bates. 43 sacks in 10 games, Mojo, on pace for a league record sacks against, and no real sign of improvement made Chu the first head to land on the chopping block of Ed Hervey. Ed Hervey spoke with TSN 1040's Bob Marjanovic this week about the decision to relieve Chu of his duties, and Hervey stated that the main reason was nothing has changed from the start of the season until now. That there are all-star caliber players on this offensive line. He says the answers are in the film, but for whatever reason, the players haven't been able to make the necessary improvements, and at times it looked like they didn't know what they were doing out there.
You know, Brian, the only thing surprising about the coach getting fired was that it took this long, really. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to see a guy get fired. Nobody wanted to see Brian Chu get fired, good local kid. But something had to give, right? Something had to give. And if it wasn't going to be a player, you knew it would have to be a coach.
Yeah, I do feel bad for Brian Chu, because I thought he would be a great addition to the staff. I was pretty excited when they hired him as Dan D'Orazio's replacement. But when you look back and hindsight's 20/20, maybe Dan D'Orazio should have been kept with this coaching staff, because he offers a wealth of experience and knowledge that Devon Claybrook's probably could have been using right now. Chu was the offensive lineman in Ottawa for their Grey Cup champion. He's a Hall of Famer, a Vancouver guy he's a future Hall of Famer, a Vancouver guy who was thrilled to be back on the West Coast with the Lions. So tough break for him, but I understand he's already accepted a position at Vancouver College to coach their varsity team. So, maybe I'll be seeing him this season on the high school fields with the Hi-Acs starting tomorrow night. It's tough. And I think Kelly Bates is qualified for the job. He was coached by one of the best in Dan D'Orazio, who is now with the Argos. He was a head coach at SFU, where he didn't have a lot of success. But that's partly due to the fact that Klan always plays American competition, and the program there was in a rebuilding phase. He was an assistant in Edmonton most recently. He returns to the Lions after a stint as the running backs coach under Wally Bono, and has been involved in scouting for the Lions as well. What kind of impact he'll have remains to be seen, but as a midseason replacement, you would think he's a pretty good choice to slide in there at this point.
Yeah, Brian, I'm not too sad to see Kelly Bates return. I enjoyed him as a player, and I think this is not his first go-around as coaching in BC, but, you got to think that the offensive line, I can't project my feelings onto them, but you got to feel pretty shitty when your coach gets fired, right? So hopefully this lights a fire under these guys and brings them out with a bit of attitude, because that's what we were hoping for. We were hoping for an offensive line that had attitude, that had some meanness to it.
That's what we were promised.
not giving up 43 sacks in 10 games.
Of course, fan reaction has been mixed to the news, and almost everything the Lions do these days is trashed on social media, even if it's positive. Some are asking why more people weren't fired, like the head coach, the special teams coach, the offensive coordinator. That's just not possible right now, and any such house cleaning would have to be would be a knee-jerk reaction. And those decisions are for the offseason. And like the players, anyone in a coaching role right now needs to step up and show well here over the final eight games of the season.
Oh, yeah. Guys are playing for their jobs. Guys are coaching for their jobs. That's the nature of the business. I think we're both on record as saying that Devon Claybrooks should not be fired in this season. Now, if he starts out 0-4 or 0-5 next season, well, then we're going to have another conversation. I just think that the main issue with the coaching staff is there's just too many young guys, man. There's too many first-time, inexperienced coaches tagged up with an inexperienced head coach. And like you mentioned, how great would Dan D'Orazio be to have Dan D'Orazio on the sidelines right now?
Yeah, and for years, all Lions fans wanted was for Dan D'Orazio to be fired. So, you know, those are decisions for the offseason. And Ed Hervey was also asked about how long the rope is for Coach Devon Claybrooks and the rest of the coaches. He said that rebuilding the Lions was going to have its challenges, but he didn't expect this many challenges. End of the season evaluations will be tougher. At the end of the year if the team doesn't make the playoffs. But right now the main goal of everyone involved is to improve the rest of the way and return this team to respectability. You know, Hervey mentioned that the playoffs are still within reach. I'll disagree with him on that point because I think the hole is just too big right now. And I know, you know, as a player, as a coach, you have to have the mentality that you can still get the job done. But, you know, there's just under half a season left here. This is a first-year head coach. He was allowed to hire his own staff, and I think, if anything, that's been the biggest mistake, is that more experience isn't at his disposal to help him grow. So, you know, what happens from now to the end of the season is really, really important. And I think, you know, if things keep going the way they are and the Lions are, you know, 2-16 or 3-15, you know, maybe he doesn't survive the offseason. But that's an evaluation that Ed Hervey's going to have to make and decide how committed he is to rebuilding this team with Devon Claybrooks.
Playoffs. I've been waiting all show to get that out. Yeah. You know, it may not be mathematical, but it's reality. We're not getting into the playoffs. And, you know, the guys got to look at these last eight games and go, okay, boys, you know, we got to go 5-3. We got to go 5-3 or at least 4-4 in these next eight games. Otherwise, there's going to be, you know, I could see a whole new assistant coaching staff.
Oh, yeah.
Coming next year, yeah. Right? You know, folks, remember, there is a coaching salary cap as well. So you can't just go out and fire everybody and hire all new guys in, especially in midseason. And who are you going to get? Mm-hmm. You know, who are you going to hire? Everyone will fire everybody. Well, who are you going to hire? Exactly. You know, Travis Lule is not just going to ride in and save the day.
Well, and as great as Travis Lule is, he doesn't have any coaching experience. Like, he's going to have to cut his teeth like everybody else has to do. And who knows if he's even interested in becoming a coach. So,
hey, you know, we know one guy that's got some coaching experience, and he's coming up on the show later on.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Ed Hervey needs to reach out to an actual ex-Lion instead of an ex-Eskimo or somebody else and reach out to Dante Marsh. Dante, we're doing what we can, bro. We're going to get you up here to the den.
Also, over the break, there were suggestions from TSN's Glenn Suter and Matt Dunnigan that some Lions players have quit on the team. And that in the Winnipeg game, they watched a player walk off the field during a play that was still going on. I haven't gone back and looked at the film, but I'm speculating that they're referring to Daron Carter. First of all, I have a lot of respect for those two guys, both former players who know a thing or two about the locker room of a football team. My problem is they don't know this locker room. And throwing out that opinion was low-hanging fruit, in my opinion. They aren't at practice every day. I doubt they were in the locker room after any game this season. I've spoken to a few people that are there every day, and they say that assumption is false. Of course, they have to say that, and there's been times where that is tested, and it would be on any 1-9 football team. But I thought those comments could have been phrased differently because there is enough crapping on these players as it is these days. You know, as for Daron Carter, let's tell it like it is. He's been a bust here, and I don't think he'll be back next season, but everyone I've talked to around the team says he's popular with his teammates. He hasn't been a problem in the locker room. He's struggling, just like everybody else is on this team, but he keeps getting singled out as the problem. You know, we may find out otherwise at some point, but the deadline to release Vets has passed, so I wouldn't expect the Lions will be willing to eat the rest of his salary.
Well, hey, you know, listeners will know how excited I was that Jerron Carter was coming and that I was willing to give him every chance in the book to be, you know, a breakthrough star on the BC Lions. You're right, man. He has been a bust, and I'm sure he's as disappointed as I am. But what are you going to do, right? You just hope that, like everybody else, because it's not only Jerron Carter that's having a bad year. There's a plethora of guys having a bad year on the BC Lions. Will he be back next year? I don't think so. You know, will somebody sign him next year? Well, somebody's always willing to give somebody another chance. But like you say, right, I can't see it being here with the BC Lions. But who knows? Maybe the guy turns it on in the next 8 games and stranger things have happened.
And football is the ultimate team game, right? You can't just single out one player and say, well, this guy's not trying, or this guy's, you know, the root of all the problems with the Lions. He's not. And, you know, I've talked to enough people that are around the team every day, and they all assured me that he has not been a problem with this team, that he's well-liked by his teammates. So, you know, look, he's struggling just like everybody else is on the team. Now, all this isn't to suggest that Ed Hervey doesn't take some blame here, because I believe he does and probably would admit to that. I think there were some mistakes made in assembling this roster, in scouting, and that's going to happen from time to time. It does to every team. But I think, you know, when you think of a guy like Winston Rose, who took over a starting role here in the secondary last year, played well but wasn't retained, I think that was a mistake. He's having a great season in Winnipeg. I think he leads the league in interceptions right now. You know, a lot of leadership was let go, and Ed said in that interview that those players were leaders in the previous era of Lions football, and most of the players on this roster had no connection to them. That may be, but I think when you look at the guys they released, the Mannies, the Raleighs, the Sollies, it was too much too soon. They mentioned on the Labor Day broadcast last week how respected a leader that Manny has been with the Riders in the locker room this year. He'd been named team captain. You know, he's not contributing as much on the field, and, you know, we certainly expected that as Lions fans. He's nearing the end of his career. But in the locker room, he's been a respected leader, you know, named team captain. You know, those players didn't know him either, and I think maybe it would have been wise to maintain some of that leadership with the players that they released.
Yeah. Hindsight being 2020, there is, you know, you'd like to see at least one of those three guys having something to say in the locker room, but it is what it is. And, you know, somebody else is going to have to step up and take over that role.
And Ed's right as well, where he says that, you know, you want some of the players that are going to be part of this team going forward to step up and be leaders. And, you know, there's no question that Mike Riley is a leader. But, you know, beyond that, who else is being a leader on this team? The TJ Lees, the Aaron Grimes, you know, these, you know, TJ Lee's been with the Lions for a few years now. Aaron Grimes is coming into a new team. It's a little more difficult to take over a leadership spot when you're a new guy. So, you know, these guys are going to take some time to gel together, and they're going to have to figure out who their core is going to be and go from there. But, you know, with where the Lions sit now from a realistic standpoint, they're now looking for positives. The GM and coaches and the players will all tell you the playoffs are still a realistic goal, but, you know, and they have to have that attitude. But as a fan, I'm going to be looking for signs that this team has enough pride to finish the season strong.
You know what? As a fan, I'm going to look for reasons why should I renew my season tickets. Not only has the on-field product not been the greatest, the in-stadium experience hasn't been the greatest either, Brian. And I know we know from having President Lala Shur on the show that they don't, you know, they don't get nothing. They have no connection to the stadium other as renters. But, you know, the food's expensive. Half the time it's not hot. You know, the list goes on and on, man. It's harder. I went through more security getting into the Lions game than I did getting into the Maiden concert.
Well, yeah, I think they've worked really hard at that this offseason, and I think that's one of the tragedies of this season is this is the first year that the Lions have really put an emphasis on marketing with the Nothing Rhymes with Orange and all the bus ads and everything going on around town, and they really wanted to build off of that and make it into a thing here. But, you know, when the team's playing like this, all that kind of goes out the window and nobody pays attention to it anymore. So You know, I think they've done some good things this year in the stadium. You know, security is what it is. It's the world we live in these days. And, you know, if that's what we got to do, that's what we got to do. But it would be great if we could have a 30,000 seat outdoor stadium somewhere with a view of the mountains and the ocean, and all the millennials would come out and hang out in the end zone and drink beer and not watch the football game like they do in other stadiums. But that's not what we have. We have a dome stadium. So, you know, it is it's what we're stuck with right now. And, you know, there's been talk about David Braley being ready to sell the team. We heard from Rick Lalisher saying that he's been mandated to find a buyer for the team. So we don't really know what's going to happen in the future here, but this is what we have for now, and there's not much we can do about that. We talked about Devon Clarebrooks and how we both hope he gets to start another season. You know, Mike O'Shea's first year with the Bombers, he went 7-11, and his second season he went 5-13. But the Bombers stuck with him, and you have to be committed to build something. And I hope the Lions can finish strong for Claybrook's sakes, because I do think he's a good coach, and he proved that in Calgary as a defensive coordinator. Now, I know that's, you know, it's a big step up to be the head coach. You know, hopefully he's learning lessons this year that are going to help him if he gets to continue. But if anything, I'd like to see a little more experience surrounding him so he has more resources at his disposal.
Yeah, you know, again, broken record time here, folks. I hope he stays. You don't just suddenly not know how to coach. I know head coaching is not the same as defensive coordinator, but the man can still coach. Let's get him some help. You know, it would have been nice if he could have, you know, apprenticed a year or two, but I guess that's what he was doing in Calgary. So maybe he was second or third in line apprentice, though. You would have liked to seen him right underneath.
Well,
you know,
as long as Dickinson's there, nobody's going to be job.
So. Yeah, that's what I mean, right? I mean, it would have been nice. Well, at least Dickinson had Huff, right? They were right there, and Claybrooks would have still been two handshakes away. It would have been nice if they'd have been able to bring him in like last year and apprentice under Wally for a year, you know.
We're also likely to see a few players brought in for a look once the dust settles in the NFL, but complicating things is the fact that the XFL kicks off their season in February, and you know, some American players may choose to explore that option rather than coming to the CFL. We'll have to wait and see, but hopefully the Lions can find a few players to bring in for a look, especially on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And you know, I know these players that are brought in after Labor Day and the NFL cuts, they rarely make an impact because most of them haven't played here before, and maybe you can find one or two that have, but you know, I wouldn't expect anybody from NFL cuts to come in here and certainly make a difference this year anyway.
No, well, you know, I got two words for you waiting for NFL cuts: Brett Boyko, right? you know, and as far as the XFL goes, I'm not too worried about it. You know, Brian, Americans love NFL. No other league has worked there. No other professional football league. College football is obviously big, but no other football league, professional, has survived in the United States if it's not named NFL. So they may come out of the gate for a couple of weeks strong like they did last time. I don't see the XFL, you know, having their 50-year season anniversary.
Yeah, I think they're going to be more successful than the AAF was. They got a lot more money behind them with the Vince McMahon group there. And I found out today Doug Flutie's actually involved with the XFL. So, you know, I think that, you know, they'll probably come out of the gate strong and have a bit more staying power. They might get through a season or two. But like you say, the NFL's king down there, and it's going to, you know, we'll see how the American fan reacts to that. And but if they can maintain a league of any sort, it's going to be tough for CFL teams to compete with that, because American players will look at the tax dollars and the money and getting noticed by NFL teams and say, look, you know, if I can stay in the States close to my family, you know, maybe the CFL is not an option anymore. But hey, that's why, you know, Randy Ambrosi is looking to go global with this league and find more players in Europe and Mexico and other places. So hopefully that pans out as well. So it hasn't been a great year to be a BC Lions fan, but our next guest was part of the greatest era of Lions football of all time. He played 11 seasons in orange and black, was a CFL All-Star, four-time CFL West All-Star, and a two-time Grey Cup champion. It's our pleasure to welcome, in my opinion, the best corner this team has ever had, Dante Marsh. Dante, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Dante, we had you on the show a few years back, a couple of times. So first of all, I want to thank you for supporting us when we were first starting out, and I thought it was time we caught up with you to find out what's going on in your life these days and how life's treating you.
Life's treating me well. I just finished up my master's degree.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm going into my fifth year of coaching. Became the defensive coordinator at San Joaquin Delta Junior College in January. So I'm just really, really chasing my coaching career, trying to learn as much as I can to advance my coaching career. And, you know, a lot of things have been falling into place. I coached the NFLPA College All-Star Game this past January with a lot of great former players. Got the fellowship and hang out for 8 days out in L.A. Hall of Famer Gerald Green, Brian Cott, Plaxico Burress, one of my big brothers that played safety and played in the league, Corey Hall, just a plethora of guys, Algie Crumpler, Ed Reed. It was a great time down in L.A. and getting a chance to work with the college guys getting ready for the draft.
What did you get your degree in?
My undergrad, my B.A. is in sociology, and my master's degree that I just wrapped up is in strength and condition. Exercise science.
Nice. Anyone that's followed you since leaving the CFL knows you're still a gym rat and you're heavily involved in coaching football in California. Was coaching something that you always saw yourself getting into, and what do you love about coaching?
Absolutely not. It kind of just, to be honest with you, I think it was always, I've always been a leader. I've always been like an alpha male type guy. Never was a follower. Kind of always did my thing. And people gravitated towards me. I don't know, like the energy. So I remember one day back when I was still playing, might have been 2013 or 2014, and one of the coaches was like, hey Dante, you ever thought about coaching, man? And I'm like, man, hell no, I ain't no coach. You know, I'm still in player mode. I'm running around. I'm having fun, still being the big kid. And he was like, nah, man, you should really think about it. You haven't realized you've been coaching the last 4 or 5 years of your career here in BC with all the young guys coming in. They, you know, they gravitate towards you. You're very detailed. You take notes in meetings, keep your body up in tip-top shape, and just, you know, the game and explain it well to them and know your craft. So I think that you should do it. And, I kind of just brushed it off. And then, when I came home after BC didn't renew my contract, I still talked to a few teams and, you know, had some thoughts about playing. But then, you know, I wanted to go back and finish my degree and then, you know, get into coaching. So my high school head coach, Alonzo Carter from Aquinas High School, who's now the running back coach at San Jose State, was like, you know, he invited me to be a keynote speaker for Contra Costa Community College in Richmond, California. And he was asking me, you don't need to give me an answer right now, but, you know, I would really love to coach my secondary. You know, if you still want to play, I understand, but if you don't go back, if you're done, man, it, you know, please, I'm telling you, you're still young, you got energy, the young guys look up to you and listen to you, I think you'll be great as a, you know, secondary coach. So I kind of, you know, pondered that and, you know, kicked tires on it and said, what the hell? Went out there and here we go, going on year five and coaching.
Hey, Dante, talking about coaching, your old teammate Ryan Phillips is now the DB coach in BC. Would you ever consider coaching up here in the CFL?
I would. I'm kind of surprised that I haven't had that opportunity or no, but I haven't talked to anybody about it. But, you know, such is life.
The Lions might have some openings soon.
Boy, the BC Lions. like I said, I thought myself or Corey Banks would have been had an opportunity up there a long time ago, but I don't know. But yeah, I'm open to whatever.
Is Corey coaching as well? Is Corey coaching as
well? He was. And I think he still has an itch to do it. I know he's doing the firefighter thing back down in Atlanta. So, you know, I talked to him not too long ago, and I think he still has the itch for it. It's just this coaching game is political as well. It's a lot of, you know, buddy type situations, and it's more so who you know than what you know type deal, and you got to just know somebody that's in position to give you an opportunity. So, you know, sometimes it burns people out when they know they're more than qualified and have the knowledge and the passion to do it, but just not getting the breaks. You know what I mean?
Hey, Dante, speaking of you and Corey Banks and Ryan Phillips, you guys all played together for a long time. And I'm going to tell you this, Dante, I am currently wearing my Lockdown U t-shirt.
Nice.
Yes, sir. When I heard you were on the show, it's like, okay, I got to throw Lockdown U on. What was the bond like with you guys? And is it still strong today?
Yeah, I haven't been able to talk to RP as often because I know he's coaching and he got two young boys and I'm coaching and my son is a senior in high school, so I'm trying to get him off to college, and my daughter's 10. So we're all kind of, you know, doing our thing. But I thought me and Corey were kind of like brothers from another mother. You know, we lived in Atlanta. I actually moved from California and had bought a house in Atlanta and stayed there for 7 years while I was in the CFL. So me and his bond is a little bit deeper, but the three of us, it was just like we knew what each other were thinking. You know, we could finish each other's sentences. We hung out together. It wasn't just football. You know, it went beyond the game. And I think the reason why my 11 years in BC was so unique and those teams were so unique because you had a perfect mixture of veteran guys. Yeah, guys with character and attitude. Like when I first got there in 04, Carl Kidd, Big yeah. T, Baron Simpson, you know, the list goes on. G. Roy, Dave Dickinson, you know, Antonio Warren, Brassel, you know, Claremont. I mean, BJ, it was just so many guys, man, you know, and I think that would never be duplicated because it's just different. Mm-hmm. And I think I haven't been able to really follow the CFL because I just don't have the time. But whatever comes across my Twitter feed, I'll see that. And it's, you know, it's just a sad situation to see the organization in such a manner that it is. When I felt like my 11 years there, we were damn near like the Patriots. We had a shot every year, except for maybe two out of my 11. But I felt like we always had a team that could challenge for, you know, the Grey Cup from the West Division, or we will be one of the teams vying for that Western Final. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I said off the top, that was probably the greatest era of BC Lions football that I've witnessed as a fan, and I've been a fan for 43 years. So, you know, you did win two Grey Cups, but that team was good for many years, hosting Western Finals, always in contention, like you said. And I'm not diminishing that in any way, but do you feel that group could have or should have won more Grey Cups?
No, and I'm not being arrogant, rash, or boastful, but I thought, you know, I played in three Grey Cups. Actually, my first year up here, we went in 04 and lost mm-hmm. to Damon Allen and then, you know, to Lano and Ottawa. I feel like we should at least have five Grey Cup rings.
Yeah.
And that's in all honesty. So, you know, I think 06 and 07 should have been back-to-back type years.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, but, even 05, you know,
that's just the way the cookie fumbles.
05 losing to Edmonton at home in the Western Final. That was a big one too.
It could have been a situation where we went back to back to back. I mean, 05, 06, 07. I just felt like Calgary caught up around 08 and they actually put a defense, or they actually allocated plenty to the defense. Because as far as I'm concerned, on the outside looking in, as a player on another team, I always felt like they put a lot of emphasis on offense for mm-hmm. the earlier part of my career up in the CFL, you know, with the receivers and Hank and all the star power on offense. And I thought that they lacked all, you know, the same type of star power on defense. And then I think in 08, finally seen where the pendulum started to swing in terms of, you know, how Calgary started to become dominant again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we should have won more cups.
You and the Lions didn't part on the best of terms, but now that some time has passed, how do you reflect back on your 11 years in BC under Wally Bono, and what are some of the moments that mean a lot to you?
Yeah, that left a bad taste in my mouth, and it still kind of does, because there was a lot of BS and people that, you know, weren't in that locker room, in that team, in that organization. The truth never really got out. And it's sad that it ended the way it did. And, you know, it's unfortunate. And I still talk to G-Roy and stuff like that. But, you know, there were great moments. Like, I can't thank, you know, Bob Obilovich enough for meeting me at the East-West Shrine Game in San Francisco back in 04 and, you know, having dinner and, you know, kicking the tires on, seeing if I was going to come up there or not. And, you know, after that, everything's history. I just feel like, you know, Wally treated me well for the most part. I'm gonna say that. You gotta respect him. He gonna shoot it to you straight. He's a dominant figure. He's headstrong. You know, I feel like I'm headstrong. You know, so you know what it is. I'm not gonna sit here and say that it was bad. You know, it was good for me. I think he wasn't known for, you know, really paying guys and doing things of that nature. And for him to continue to pay me the six figures for 9 of my 11 years, I can't really complain. You know, I just, the way it ended wasn't right. And I still feel like, you know, the 31 jersey and 24 jersey still being in circulation isn't right, or not, you know, honoring Corey Banks and myself, and then of course Ryan. I think that needs to be done, and that's just my personal opinion. I don't know. I feel like I had, in terms of numbers and plays made and winning two cups and all that stuff at that boundary corner, I've got to be in the conversation in top five all time, period.
Absolutely. I've been tweeting about that for the last couple of years. It's time to get you guys up there for sure. What would that mean to you, Dante, personally?
Really, to be honest, people know. The respect is there. Somebody messaged me a few years ago where I'm on the CFL Hall of Fame ballot. That just making it, just getting on that ballot means something, you know? So if it ever happens or it don't happen, it's whatever. I know what I brought to the game. I know the fans know what I brought to the game. I know that organization in the city of Vancouver know what I brought to that game every week for 11 straight years. So, I mean, being recognized as one of the greatest players at my position to ever do it would mean a lot. But, I mean, it is what it is. Life goes on.
It's going to come.
Hey, Dante, yeah. We all know that you're a fan of the Oakland Raiders. And next year, of course, they're not the Oakland Raiders.
No, they will always be the Oakland Raiders. I have the Raider emblem tattooed on my back. So people got to understand, the Oakland Raiders does not just stop at the team. It's being from Oakland. It's the whole movement. If you're from Oakland, you're born and raised from Oakland, you're a Raider. It goes back to the 60s and the 70s, the Black Panther Party, it being a liberal place. A lot of things started in the Bay Area. It started in Oakland. There's so much culture there. So it was a renegade type thing back in the day where guys that were washed out at other teams, the Raiders would give them a shot and they become stars. So it's just, it's synonymous with the city. So I don't care what nobody say. I was 4 years old when they moved to L.A. I was a Raider fan. Before I could even walk, I'm going to be a Raider fan forever, and they will always be the Oakland Raiders. I don't care what nobody says.
What's the atmosphere like in Oakland, knowing that this is the last year for the team there?
Oakland really isn't open that much anymore because of gentrification. So it really is starting to take on a different look, so to speak. So, and that's going on in every major metropolitan city across the country. I mean, you know, they're moving the people that have been there for a long time up out of there. So, a lot of fans are upset and mad. They're really mad at you know, Mr. Davis for not getting that done. But I blame the city and I blame the team. They came back in 95. That stadium should have been done a long time ago.
Another one of the greatest lines of all time, Merv Fernandez, was an Oakland Raider. I'm sure you're familiar with him. Have you ever had a chance to meet him? Yeah, you bet. Have you ever had a chance to meet him and talk with him about being a Raider or his time up here in BC?
I've met Merv in passing. I never had the opportunity to sit down and talk to him. I did have the opportunity of talking to Jack Tatum. He was my DB coach for a week in high school. Super throwback, you know, one of the greatest safeties to ever do it. The way he played the game, unmatched, just the tenacity, the physicality, just the passion and the heart to go out and knock somebody out. Like he was just that. He had an aura around him, you know. So I did get a chance to talk to him, Jim Otto. I talked to a couple of older guys. I had the privilege of being around, you know, some greats, Charles Woodson, you know, so it's just awesome. The Oakland Raiders, the whole silver and black thing, Oakland is just tough guy stuff, you know, blue collar, get it done by any means necessary type of situation. So, you know, that's just what it is. And that's why I say it's synonymous with the city, because that's, you know, people who are born and raised from Oakland know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you don't have a lot of chance to follow the CFL, so I'm not going to ask you what your thoughts are about this 1-9 Lions team. But did you ever?
Oh, you can ask me.
Okay. what's going on with this 1-9 Lions team, Dante?
I think what it is you can't. You know, Mike Riley was a teammate of mine, and I love Mike Riley. Great competitor, phenomenal quarterback, a winner, a champion, tough. But, I mean, you spend a lot of money on the quarterback, you have no money to spend on other players or pieces. And I also feel like it's not the BC Lion way for the 11 years I've been there to go out and splurge in free agency for multiple guys.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We built our teams by bringing in our own guys. Like, mm-hmm. Wally was never a free agent guy. I think the whole time I was in BC, we dabbled in free agency less than a handful of times. You're talking about Arlen Bruce, who's a major piece to come in and help, you know, give us that boost to match him up with G-Roy for us to make that Grey Cup run in 2011 when we started out like 1-6. We also had, the receiver from, Winnipeg come over, played with the Houston Texans. I can't remember his name right now. I'm bad with names. We also had Charlie come over
mm-hmm.
from Winnipeg. So
yeah.
We never really, you know, built our team based on high price free agents. The only free agent pickup throughout my tenure that really just became like a real Lion and really had a lot of production and it's a Hall of Fame player. It's Corey Banks, and that was because Ottawa, you know, folded. So I think you gotta get the scouts out there to get your own guys. In the CFL, you know, the turnover is so much. So you gotta take your lumps and bumps and bruises to let these guys kind of gel together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And if you have a revolving door every year, you're going to find yourself in a situation to where you're never going to get cohesive. You're never going to get guys that are going to be able to play together like that.
Yeah.
And I just think they're in a situation where it's like, man, it's all bad. And everybody's looking for the answer. And it's who knows?
Yeah.
I just think you got to get guys who really love football, who really, how can I explain it? We were more than a team. And I'm not trying to diminish or not acknowledge teams that are playing or have played after I was done or retired, because I'm not a hater. I don't want to seem like the bitter ex-athlete. I'm saying with 100% unequivocally, without a doubt, people who know, there will never be a team or teams like the teams we had throughout that time. It was just, it was different.
Have you ever been on a team that has struggled like this? And how do you keep that locker room together and turn something like this around?
2011 was so unique in the fact that, like we talked about before, we were a team that should have won a lot more championships than we did. I've been to 3 and won 2. Throughout my tenure, I think we could have at least played in 6 total breakups at minimum. It came to a point where Wally brought me in the office, along with the Paul McCallums, the BJs, the G-Roys, the veteran guys making the Corey Banks, the guys making the, you know, on a higher scale, 6-figure contracts, myself, and said, you know, for those of y'all that know Wally, you know, my sense is, you know, yeah, it's not our fault, it's not the coach's fault, you know, we're doing our job. So it's up to you guys, man. And if you don't get it done, you know it's going to happen, right? So that's what he said. And I said, yeah, I already know what you're talking about. The guys that are veteran guys with the higher salaries are going to start getting cut. So that's all he pretty much. I mean, I don't take it as a threat. You know, that's the nature of the business. He was being brutally honest. And that's just what it is. We all know we signed up for it. You know, he used to tell me all the time, Dante, I didn't sign you to come here to play. I signed you to come in here and win.
Yeah.
It's a difference. I could get a guy on the street to put on a uniform and play. Mm-hmm. I need you to win. So, once he said that, we got together as veteran guys in the locker room and started, you know, talking like, hey, man, I love getting my check every week. I love being able to pay my mortgage on my nice house and take care of my family. So, and I love the game more than anything. So let's step our game up and let's really, you know, get out of this. We're the BC Lions. People will just come down and lay down for us at BC Clutch Stadium. Because I don't know how you guys do it, but I'm going to keep it honest. For like half of my career up there, it was kind of like, man, we was already winning the game when people came into BC Clutch.
Mm-hmm.
That's how electric it was. So I think in the back of our minds, a lot of the guys on the team that were older guys, we were so accustomed to success that I think subconsciously we didn't really realize, shit, we're 1-6. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was
how that turned out.
That year you didn't start in BC Place either. It was at the temporary stadium at Empire Field.
Right. So it was an adventure, to say the least.
Hey, Dante, with the XFL starting up in February, do you think it's going to hamper the CFL recruiting in any way? And what do you tell young American players if they ask you about the CFL?
I think it'll definitely hamper. I used to say that when I was still in my prime playing. I said, the CFL game is such a wonderful game. I don't know why we keep a chokehold on the explosion of it, if that makes sense. For me, In my mind, baseball was America's game, right? When the AFL and the NFL did that merger and started to market it and make it bigger than life here, NFL is America's game now. Baseball is a backseat. My thing is the people in Canada who run the CFL should not play second fiddle to hockey.
Mm-hmm.
This is entertainment. These are professional, real professional athletes. Contrary to what some people may think, I made an NFL roster. I played Division I football. So did a lot of players that have played in the CFL and who are playing now. So these aren't second rate players.
Nope.
So they shouldn't be treated as second rate players. You get what I'm saying? You have to stop trying to market the league and the teams and thinking that people are paying hard-earned money to come see the logo of that team or the logo of the league. No, they are coming to identify with players. You market the players. You take care of the players. If you do that, the league will be bigger and better. You got to build it and they will come. That's truly what I think. I think that my time in BC, we were too accessible. I mean, a fan could come to practice every day. Mm-hmm. It was a point in time where I was signing something every day. And I love fan interaction. Everybody who knows I'm cooler than a fan. But for you to come to my practice and have access to me every single day, shoving stuff in my face, and I feel obligated to sign it, versus, hey, why don't you go on to DanteMarch.com and buy an 8x10 and I'll autograph it for you.
Yeah.
Y'all feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because you're a professional athlete. I think sometimes the fans, even though it's like a double-edged sword. Yes, these guys are professional athletes. Some are some of the best at what they do, period. But I see them on the SkyTrain. Oh, he's not all over the buses, or he's not on commercials. So, they don't have that star power, mm-hmm. so to speak. You get what I'm saying? So, like, even when I was on the bus, or I was on cups, or with the black uniforms, it's not me. It's me, but it's not me, if that makes sense. They're not marketing Dante Marsh. They're marketing the BC Lions.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? You market number 31 Dante Marsh. That's market. You market Mike Riley, number 13. That's who you market. You market players, because fans fall in love and identify with players. That's how you're going to keep the young people interested. That's how you're going to be able to really get grassroots football. You got to make the CFL bigger than life up there. You cannot play second fiddle to hockey. Hockey's a great game, and I'm not knocking it. I'm not Canadian, but I understand Canadians love their hockey. Yeah. But guess what? If you really want the CFL to strive and make leaps and bounds in terms of revenue, in terms of being bigger and better, you're going to have to really market it and really push the players. That means the salary's going to have to change. And that's a whole other conversation. You're asking an American to come up to Canada. It's, what, 71 cents on the dollar right now? Yeah. And you're asking him to play football for 50 or 60 grand. That's not including the exchange rate and the taxes and all that stuff. If another sustainable league can happen in the States, it'll impact the CFL heavily.
Well, Dante, this has been fantastic. It's been great catching up with you, and I'm glad you're still involved in the game, helping young players learn their crafts and passing on your knowledge. We wish you all the best, and I promise we won't let people forget about you, Corey and Ryan, when it comes to accolades that you all deserve, not only with the BC Lions, but when it comes to Canadian football. Thanks for your time tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Dante.
Mojo, great to catch up with Dante, and maybe we'll see him back one day as a coach in the CFL, maybe even with the BC Lions.
Hey, you know, there may be some openings pretty soon. You never know. But, you know, there's a guy who should be ripe for the picking. The Lions should be looking at this guy. Here's an ex-Lion who is now working his way through the coaching ranks. He should definitely be on the radar. I mean, let's bring in some Lions for a change.
Well, they brought in Ryan Phillips, and I don't think you can point at the secondary and say that it's been a major area of concern for the BC Lions, and I would assume that Dante coming in would probably be involved with the secondary in some way, shape, or form. But, coaching at the junior college level, I think maybe he needs a little bit more seasoning before he's considered. He maybe get it with a Division One or Two school in the NCAA and maybe cut some teeth there. But certainly I think he knows the game, he knows his craft, and he knows how to teach players. So hopefully he gets to experience that. And like I told him, we're going to keep pounding the drum to get Dante and Ryan and Corey up on that Wall of Fame and the Ring of Honor. And I think it's just a matter of time before all three of those guys are in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. So it's back to work for the Lions, who will visit Montreal this week. And Mojo, like we said, at this point, it's all about respectability and playing for your job, for your teammates, and for the fans. Let's hope they can go into Montreal and turn this thing around against an Alouettes team who's playing really well under Kahari Jones, which is nice to see. Good for Kahari for going in there and turning that team around. Quarterback Vernon Adams Jr., who of course was a property of the BC Lions at one point and wanted a contract that was too rich for Wally Bono's blood after, you know, before even playing a game. So they had to send him packing. But there's also running back William Stanbeck. So this is going to be no easy task going into Montreal. The Lions have had a pretty good rate of success there over the last few years, but they got their work cut out for them. Both teams coming off a bye, and we'll see if the Lions can start to turn things around and get this ship steered in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, Brian, I'm a little jealous about the turnaround in Montreal. Good to see some teams rise in the East. Good time to be an Alouettes fan. They look like a pretty exciting young team. And I got to tell you, I took them in my pick'em pool this week.
Well, that's it for episode 140. I want to thank our guest, Dante Marsh, for joining us tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, Metal Rocks. Make sure to visit bclionsden.ca. Click on the link to their website and see all the awesome handcrafted jewelry they have to offer. This show is part of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Make sure to check out all the great shows that are part of it at cfpodnetwork.ca. And follow the network on Twitter at CF Pod Network. Please subscribe and listen to the show on your favorite podcast app. Visit us at bclionsden.ca. Follow us on Twitter at bclionsden and at mojocamp. And on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. That's podcast PAWDCAST. Until next week, I'm Brian Warish. And on behalf of Mojo Camp, enjoy the games this weekend. And as always, roar you Lions roar.
Listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.